Okay, so you know how you hear about these like huge legal settlements, you know, the ones where there are like billions of dollars at stake. So like have you ever stopped and thought, you know, like what happens after that? Like especially when it comes to the lawyers' fees. Like how do we make sure that what they're getting paid is actually ethical? You know, especially once the really big legal battles are over.
Oh, absolutely. And it's something that's so important for everyone in the legal field, especially, you law students out there, to really understand.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's not just like theoretical stuff you learn in class. This is real world stuff that has, huge implications for everyone involved.
Totally.
And that's exactly why we're doing this deep dive today, to really get into the nitty-gritty of a case that brought all these questions to the forefront, the Sulzer-Hippe-Nie litigation.
Right.
This wasn't just about some faulty medical devices. It became this like landmark case that showed everyone how these, typical contingent fee arrangements can sometimes, go a little too far.
Yeah, totally. It's like a cautionary tale, you know, especially for anyone thinking about going into mass torts or class action work. Because the Sulzer case is like, it's essential knowledge.
It is.
You know, we're going to get into how the courts really scrutinize the fees in this case to make sure the people who were harmed were actually protected, you know, at the end of the day. And just so everyone knows, everything we're talking about today is based on actual court documents and like in-depth analyses of what happened in the Sulzer litigation.
So you're getting the real deal here.
Exactly.
So no like, made up stuff, just the facts.
The facts.
All right, so let's like get into the basics here.
Look.
What was actually wrong with these Sulzer implants that led to this massive legal battle?
All right, so Sulzer made these hip and knee implants right. The hip implant was called the interop acetabular shell, and the knee implant was called the natural knee to tibial base plate. And the problem was there was this manufacturing residue left on them, a lubricant that they use in the process. And that residue prevented the implants from bonding properly to the bone after surgery.
Oh, I see. So it's like if you try to glue something together, but there's oil on the
Yeah,
surface.
exactly. It just won't stick. And that's a huge problem when you're talking about implants that are supposed to be like permanently integrated into the body.
Absolutely. I bet that caused some serious complications for the
Oh,
patients.
yeah, absolutely.
What happened?
Patients started experiencing like loosening of the implant after the surgery, which often meant they had to go through another surgery, a revision surgery to fix it.
Oh man, that's awful.
Yeah, it was not a fun time.
No, not at all. So I can see why this led to so many lawsuits.
Oh, yeah, it was a big deal.
So what happened next?
Well, Sulzer ended up issuing recalls, first for the hip implants in December of 2000, and then later for some of the knee implants when they realized they had a similar problem.
So it was like a double whammy.
Basically.
I see.
And then these recalls basically opened the floodgates for individual lawsuits all across the country.
Yeah, it makes sense that people would be upset and want to take legal action.
Right.
So with lawsuits popping up everywhere, how do they manage all of that?
That's where MDLs come in,
MDLs.
multi-district litigation. So basically, all the federal lawsuits against Sulzer were consolidated and transferred to a single court. This one was in the Northern District of Ohio, and it became MDL, 11401.
So like all the cases went to one place.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it streamlines things, you know.
I see.
Imagine if each case had to be tried separately all over the country, it'd be chaos.
Yeah, that would be a nightmare.
Total nightmare.
So MDLs are a way to make things more efficient.
Exactly.
So this MDL paved the way for a settlement, right?
Yeah. Eventually, they reached this massive settlement agreement, and Sulzer created a $1 billion settlement trust to compensate the patients.
Wow, $1 billion. That's huge.
Yeah, it was a big one.
So what were like the key points of the agreement?
Well, one important part was that class members who had to have revision surgery were guaranteed at least $160,000.
Okay, so that gives you an idea of how much harm was caused.
Yeah, it wasn't just a slap on the wrist.
No, definitely not.
Now, here's the thing, and this is important for all you future lawyers out there.
Okay, I'm listening.
The core terms of this settlement were basically agreed upon by February 1st, 2002.
Okay, February 1st, 2002. Got it.
Mark that date in your calendars because it's super important when we talk about the ethical stuff surrounding the lawyer's fees that came after.
Okay, so we've got this $1 billion settlement pretty much set by February 2002.
Right.
What was the problem with the fees that the lawyers were asking for?
So that's really the big question here, the heart of our deep dive, you know. When does a contingent fee arrangement, which is pretty standard in these cases, become unethical.
Right.
Especially after a settlement's basically a done deal.
It's all about the risk changing, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
for the lawyers.
Yeah. So think about it from their perspective.
Okay.
Before February 1st, 2002, there's real risk that they might not get paid anything.
Yeah, if the case went south.
Exactly. They could have worked on this for years and gotten nothing.
Right, because contingent fees are all about getting paid only if you win.
Yeah, no win, no fee.
But after February 2002, things were different, right?
The risk was basically gone.
Because the settlement was pretty much guaranteed.
Right.
So the lawyers weren't really taking a gamble anymore.
Exactly. And the work they had left to do was mostly administrative stuff.
Like what kind of stuff?
Like monitoring court approvals, helping clients with paperwork processing submissions, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay. So not really the heavy lifting of litigation anymore.
Exactly.
And that's where the ethical issue comes in, right?
Because continuing to charge a full contingent fee, like a third or even 40% of the settlement after all that risk was gone, seemed kind of excessive.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like the work they were doing wasn't as complex or demanding as the initial litigation.
Right. And there are rules against excessive fees, right?
Yeah. Most states have rules about that.
Like what kind of rule?
Like disciplinary rule 2106, for example.
Okay.
It says lawyers can't charge fees that are clearly excessive.
So the argument was that asking for that much money after the settlement was pretty much done was unethical.
Exactly.
And the court agreed.
Oh, yeah. They were not happy about it.
What did they say?
The court literally said, these attorneys are being greedy.
Oh, wow. They didn't hold back.
Nope. They also said the fees were grossly disproportionate to work required.
That's pretty harsh.
Yeah, they were serious.
So a court wasn't messing around?
Not at all.
I mean, it makes sense, though. They have to protect the clients.
Absolutely. It's their job to make sure things are fair.
So how did they fix it?
They came up with this thing called the CIP-9 procedure.
CIP-9? What's that?
It was basically a way to address the whole fee issue in the Sulzer settlement.
Okay, so how did it work?
Well, instead of getting a percentage of the settlement, the lawyers would get paid an hourly rate for the work they did after February 1st, 2002.
Oh, so they switched from a contingent fee to an hourly rate.
Yeah, exactly. And the money for those hourly fees came from the settlement trust itself, not from the client's individual payouts.
Oh, that's interesting. So the clients weren't directly paying the lawyers anymore.
Exactly. And they capped the hourly rate at $125.
Oh, okay. So they put a limit on how much the lawyers could charge per hour.
Right. It was all about making sure things were reasonable.
And what about the lawyers who had already gotten those big contingent fees?
The court ordered them to give the excess money back to their clients.
Oh, wow. So they had to return the money they had already collected?
Yep. The court meant business.
That's pretty serious.
Yeah. It shows how committed they were to fairness.
So what about the claims administrator? What was their role in all of this?
They had a big job, actually.
What did they do?
First, they were in charge of distributing the settlement money to all the eligible class members.
Okay, so they handled the logistics.
Yeah, and they also had to make sure that the lawyers were following the CIP-9 rules.
Oh, so they were like the enforcers.
Yeah, basically making sure nobody was trying to pull a fast one.
Got it. So CIP-9 was all about finding a balance, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Making sure the lawyers were paid for the work they did.
But not taking advantage of the clients.
Right. The court wanted to make sure the people who were harmed got what they deserved.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So the Sulzer case really changed the game when it came to how we think about lawyers' fees in these big settlements.
Right. It's like a cautionary tale for lawyers.
Totally.
So what are some of the lessons that lawyers, especially new ones, should learn from this?
Well, first off, courts are paying close attention to how lawyers are getting paid in these MDLs and class actions.
Okay, so they're watching.
Yeah, they're making sure everything's on the up and up, especially as a settlement gets closer to being finalized.
So lawyers can't just assume they'll get away with charging a huge percentage no matter what.
Nope, not anymore.
So what else should lawyers keep in mind?
They have to be ready to adjust their fees if the risk in the case changes.
Like if a settlement is pretty much guaranteed.
Exactly. They can't just stick to their original fee agreement if it's no longer fair.
Right, because that could be unethical.
Totally. And it could even lead to malpractice claims.
Oh, wow. So there are serious consequences.
Absolutely.
And the Sulzer case also shows how much power MDL courts have, right?
Yeah. They can really oversee and regulate how lawyers behave.
Especially when it comes to protecting the class members.
Right. They have a duty to make sure everyone's treated fairly.
It's good to know that the courts are looking out for the little guy.
Yeah, for sure.
So what about this fee escrow thing I've been hearing about?
Oh, yeah. That's becoming more common these days.
What is it?
It's basically a way to hold part of the lawyer's fees in a separate account.
Okay.
While the court reviews everything and makes sure the fees are okay.
Oh, I see. So it gives the court more control over the process.
Exactly. It helps prevent those post-settlement fee disputes and make sure everything's transparent.
That's smart. It's like a safety net.
Yeah, basically.
So to sum up, what are the big takeaways from the Sulzer case?
Okay, so takeaway number one, the ethics of a contingent fee depend on how much risk the lawyer is actually taking.
Okay, so if the risk goes down, the fee should too.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
Takeaway number two, courts are actively protecting class members from lawyers who might try to take advantage of them.
Especially after the hard part of the litigation is over.
Right. They're not going to let lawyers just walk away with a huge chunk of the settlement money without making sure it's fair.
That's good to know.
And takeaway number three, the CIP 9 procedure shows that there are other ways to pay lawyers in these cases.
So it's not always about a percentage of the settlement.
Right. There are ways to make sure everyone's compensated fairly.
That's really important.
Yeah. It's all about finding a balance.
So this Sulzer case really highlights the two sides of being a lawyer in these big class actions.
Yeah. You're an advocate for your clients, but you also have a duty to be ethical and responsible.
Right. You have to fight for them, but also make sure you're not taking advantage of them.
Exactly. And the Sulzer case shows what can happen when those two roles clash.
It's a good reminder for all the aspiring lawyers out there.
Yeah, for sure. You got to think about the ethical implications of how you're getting paid.
Absolutely, because it's not just about winning the case, it's about doing what's right.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks.
And that's a wrap on our deep dive into the Sulzer hip and knee litigation.
Until next time.
See ya.